Good afternoon, and welcome once again to this week's What Comes Next Live, going out at 5:30 on a Wednesday. As normal, I am in London, and my guest this week is Ben Reed, who is ex-British Army and now the founder and CEO of Redeployable, and focused on building a community of veterans focused on developing their careers. Good evening, Ben. How are you?
I'm great. At 5:30 on a Wednesday. It's good.
A short week?
Yeah, it's a short week, isn't it? It's a short week, so it feels like we're right at the start of the week when actually we're not, so.
And where do we find you this evening? Where are you today?
Just outside of London. An hour on a train. My accent is a northern accent for anyone listening outside of the UK, but my wife made me... Settle down here. That was the non-negotiable when I left the military.
Had you come south, yeah. As somebody who's a reservist, I have to say, not full active service, but as an ex-infantryman myself, I'm having a giggle right now because my short week after the long Easter weekend is I'm off from Friday for 5 days to where a lot of my family roots are, which is the Outer Hebrides. And I'm traveling with somebody who's a city person. And I'm trying to explain to them that umbrellas don't work up there. you need proper waterproofs. You need proper waterproof hiking boots. You need all of that gear. And I said, don't worry, you can check a bag.
It's been an experience.
It's certainly different from the city. So tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be doing what you're doing and what that's all about.
Yeah, of course. So as I said, I'm a northern lad. I planned to go to university, went to sixth form, dropped out of sixth form and followed my brother and my sister into the military. Served for 12 years. I was an aircraft engineer by trade in the Army, British Army. And then I transitioned out of the forces in 2017. I moved into tech, actually. I moved into sales. And I moved into sales because my brother had trodden that path. He was in software sales. Told me that you get paid considerably more than a sergeant in the Army. So I listened to him. I also had a friend who was a PE teacher, a sixth form PE teacher, who'd also transitioned into tech sales. So I had a bit of a network of people in my ear telling me that I might be a good fit for the role. So I made the leap, and the rest is history. You know, I've fully, you know, loved my time in tech. Went down the chain. So started in a really, really, you know, big company, then went to a smaller company, all global, and then landed in a head of sales role at a software company, 30-person startup. Got the startup bug, identified a challenge in our community and thought, you know, why not me? Why not go after this challenge and try and do something, you know, that financially, you know, could be rewarding in the long term, but actually has some purpose to it. And I think that big thing for me now, you know, I've started the business 2 years ago, and actually the sense of fulfillment for me for what we do is second to none. So. And for the people listening, what we do, you know, our mission statement is to change the way the world sees veteran talent. Been a lot of stigma around like charity supporting people into employment, and a lot of the charities do a great job. But I firmly believe that the skills that you accrue in the military make you stand out in civilian life. Mm-hmm. And there's an awful lot of underemployment out there in the military community, and we're really focused on ensuring that people aren't underutilized and they're in roles that really, you know, fulfill them, help their families with a little bit more financial freedom. So
there's lots of things come out there from me. The first one is to hear more about what that is, about the community and about what you're developing as a business. Another one, pick them in any order or ignore them, it's up to you. Another one is I'm always fascinated by entrepreneurial thinking. And you and I, when we met, we had a walk around at one of Ben Braben's walk and talks. From what I understand, you were quite successful in the tech sales side. So the stepping away from that to the life of a startup founder has a lot of challenges, right? Mm-hmm. But you did it anyway. So I'm interested in why. Question I always like to ask startup founders is, why did you do it? Why did you decide to take the leap? And then I guess the third one, what would you share with other people leading startup organizations from your 2 years of experience? But maybe start with the organization and the community, and what is the gap that you saw that you're looking to fill?
Yeah, of course. I've written all three questions down, so I don't forget that. What we do, without going into too much depth, I'm conscious of time. We're a tech organization. We raised our first pre-seed round last year. I'd been running the business for about just shy of 12 months at that point. And we're all about translating experiences and skills into the real world, I would say. I know the army is the real world, but to me, the only way I could describe leaving the forces is exactly the same as when you're leaving school. You're trying to carve your path into like a new career, depending on how long you've been. It might even, you might have been in the forces for 24 years. So actually that transition out is daunting, for experienced people to try and figure out where your skills translate into certain industries, into certain functions, into certain business types. So we're using technology to create communities, and then that translates into a marketplace where employers can then tap into our community and then access that talent and then subsequently understand that talent. So fundamentally trying to lower that barrier to entry for our community to get to that first interview. And I fundamentally believe that our community with the right preparation will blow employers away, and we see that regularly. So that's kind of high level what we do.
We half an hour you will find is quite a long time when you just talk through things. So
Yeah.
when you talk about using the technology to create communities, what do you mean by that?
For me, we could be a services business. We have a service side of our business right now, and that could be projects, it could be recruitment, whatever it is. But ultimately, to have a huge impact with a services business, I need lots of people to do that. And I believe digitally, we can have a huge impact in terms of the way in which the community educates themselves, connects to mentors, connects to resources, and then connects to the employer. And I think through that process and understanding that user experience end to end, we can then start to improve conversion along the way for the community members. And I always mention the community because ultimately, everything in our business comes back to the community. It is about the community. We're a kind of purpose-led business. So for me, philosophically, it's do we want to scale a tech business where we can impact thousands?
Yeah.
We want to scale a services business where, it may be thousands over a 5-year period, right? So that's for me in my mind. Our services business is amazing and we're doing amazing work. But actually, from a tech perspective, I think,
So by the services business, from talking to you before, to simplify it, it's a recruitment matching, human to human business to some extent, whereas the community has a different opportunity. Do you have any idea how many people you're talking about? Like, how many people leave military service every year, for example?
Of course, I mean, the picture in the US versus the UK is a bit different, as you can imagine. There are circa 13,000 service leavers last year in the UK.
Wow.
Now, we're not focused just on service leavers in our business. We're focused on the military community because, as I said right at the beginning of this, for me, we're not trying to tackle unemployment. We're trying to tackle underemployment,
Right.
helping you properly leverage your skills and apply them to a career, a function, and an industry where you've got that, the ability to progress and, build that financial freedom and start to kind of be that inspirational story that we can feed back into the community. So 13,000 service leavers. There are over 1 million. There's different data on this, but there's over 1 million working age veterans in the UK.
Wow. Wow.
Now flip that to the US, and there are 200,000 service leavers a year.
Yeah.
And there are
Much, much bigger number.
25 million. It's obviously a different kettle of fish.
And then, of course, you will have. So, how many people are in active service right now in the UK?
It's reducing
That's right.
quite significantly. There are definitely recruitment challenges within the military right now, and I know that the forces are doing things to kind of to tackle that. From my last the last time I saw the data, there is 140,000 regular, and I think something in the region of 30,000 reservists, for maybe just slightly higher, 40,000 reservists. Now, there's a big push on the reserve front as well to kind of bolster up numbers. But yeah, you're not talking significant amounts in comparison to the US.
No, I mean, I'm much older than you, and I remember when I was a reservist, the numbers were hugely bigger than that. But now they talk about you could get the whole of the British Army and their vehicles into Wembley Stadium, which is quite scary how small it is now. But that said, these numbers are big. There's 1 million people in the broadest community, 13,000 a year. And I'm interested in what help you need to build a community at different ends and maybe put that out there. But before that, maybe you and I have talked about this and I was really energized by it. What do you feel are, if I'm a potential employer looking at the CV of somebody who has not done 12 years or 20 years of active service compared to somebody who has, there will be a lot of variety in this, but what does experience as a non-commissioned officer or a commissioned officer, what does that bring to the civilian business community? And maybe a couple of stories.
It's such a broad question. I just think of the veteran community, the military community, as it's the same as if you think about saying somebody's in tech, a large tech organization. Let's think about Salesforce. I'm in tech. Well, the difference between a software engineer and an AI engineer, a salesperson, a customer success manager, a marketer, you could keep going. There are so many roles with so many different skills in that one organization. And I look at it in the same way from the military. You think about pre-military, the story is they are whatever they are in the military, but actually, where have they come from? Did they join late? Did they join? I know people who joined at 25, 26 after having 8 years in civilian life. So they're bringing a different skill set into the military. Then you move into the military, you different basic training, different units, different job roles, different exercises, different equipment, different rank, different time served. So actually, I could give you all of the kind of soft skill buzzwords, but ultimately, I think my point to employers is that they're all individuals. They've all been, I've not even talked about interests and hobbies and, all sorts of weird and wonderful things. So I think it's about understanding the individual, in my opinion. And there lies a challenge just in general for employers, right? Like talent acquisition teams, it's difficult to be a recruiter, an internal recruiter right now. Companies are laying people off. There's a high turnover. And historically for junior talent people in businesses, there's a churn. So actually helping organizations to understand how a veteran is an individual is a challenge in itself. And again, this comes back to the tech piece opinion
So I
where.
think that if I give you a pers my thought from listening to this is that, and from talking to you before, is I think it's both having them understand as an individual, but the first thing you talked about was this stigma and looking at it as a charitable thing and a DEI thing, et cetera, or some form of diversity. I remember you telling me about, I'm going to be anonymous, but you can decide if you want to de-anonymize it. Talk about somebody who is an engineer, right, and runs a team, right, who's quite close to you, right, and has got to a certain NCO rank, right, and the type of job that she does. And I was going, my God, she's in engineering, right? And one industry I know quite a lot about is engineering. One of the toughest jobs in the world there is talent acquisition and engineering. They cannot get enough engineers for the demand for civil engineering work, for example, around the world. If you want somebody who's going to be, that's the skill set, but what also does a military leader bring to that? Forget people in a rank, in a rank
Yeah.
that they move up the ranks. How many military people are ever late for work?
Yeah. So you
Simple
yeah.
things, right?
These are all the things that you take for I guess you take for granted in the military. So you spend your time in the military continuously developing, and that's either because you put through courses, equipment courses, new equipment's released within a unit, or you move around every 2 to 3 years, which is like the norm within the military. So you'll move. In my case, I was an engineer. So I could be fixing a Lynx Mark 9 Alpha, and then I move unit and I'll be fixing a fixed wing Britten Norman Defender or a Islander or a Gazelle or you name it. It's different engines, different gearboxes, different oils, different, you name it. That's one thing. So that ability to learn and upskill quickly because you've done it all of your career is one thing. I think the next thing is actually just taking stock of the situation. You're put under quite pressurized situations, even more so if you're in the infantry on operations. So just having the ability to remain relatively calm when everybody's running around with their hair on fire is absolutely a skill set that you come out with, because you can only develop that in kind of high pressure, high stress situations. So I think that's another key factor. The ability to actually communicate up and down is definitely a skill that you develop and don't really consider when you're in the forces, where you'll be in a room with your peers briefing maybe junior ranks, and then you'll be walking into a room with a colonel where you're then having to deliver information to a colonel in a certain way. I think the cross-functional mm-hmm. way of working, along with working with the RLC, who are our logistics support, or the Army Air Corps, who fly the aircraft, mm-hmm. or the infantry who are on the ground, or you name it, chefs, who are cooking your dinner. There's all sorts of people who support you along the way from different units. So I think that kind of cross-functional collaboration piece is also another key factor for people transitioning. I mean, I can keep...
In short, the level of professionalism in the services is a simpler way of putting it. From my experience, higher than in civilian life.
You don't last too long if you don't have a level of professionalism in the forces. It's a little bit more direct in the military than it is in civilian life. So... yeah. As you know,
yeah.
So 100%. You definitely found out in the military if you aren't working to a certain standard.
Well, and you're called out because sometimes lives depend upon things being done the right way. So there is a professional shorthand on things, and sometimes it can be a bit direct. But the same thing applies if you work in forms of engineering, where, again, a field I know a lot about, where safety is involved. There's a real low tolerance for things not being done the right way. One of the terms the fighter pilots use is OODA, observe, orient, decide, and act. Right? And that's something you talked about being under pressure. So in short, if the audience can take away from this, there's an awful lot. Having somebody with military experience and skills relevant to their organization and the job, is an absolute, addition. It's like when I used to hire people, I always looked at the skills as being, well, you have to have them. You have to have a certain experience. Beyond that, did they do professional? Did they do competitive sports at a higher level? Did they do voluntary stuff? Were they in the military? And these are generally things where I'd hire that person above somebody who didn't, and all they did was focus on the skills and the job experience. What help do you need to take your business forwards? Right. You know, if there was some listener out there who, could help you, who do you need to be talking to, and what do you need to be talking about?
That's a really good question, and definitely one I haven't prepped for. We are like any startup. We're trying to develop something that is new, mixed with building a team, mixed with managing cash flow, mixed with making sure that the culture remains the same as we grow the team. So it's like, I assume this is my first rodeo, right? As a founder, I assume we're facing the same challenges as any startup who is trying to figure out and iterate as they win new business and win new clients and launch communities and all of that good stuff. So I'd say, for me, like the path we're on, I'm quite an ambitious individual. You asked me why, I guess, like why move into a startup. Why start my own thing? Well, I think it's like that level of fulfillment. I care about achievement and also feeling like I'm doing something with some sort of purpose. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just I generally find that not asking for things from people and just having good conversations with people who may be able to help in the future is kind of my approach. So there's no ask other than if there are people that think they could support in some way. Like, there's generally quite a lot of affinity with what we do. Generally anyone who thinks that they could add any value, could give any sort of advice and support on helping grow the business, I'm all ears. I'm not a person who thinks he knows everything. I have a lot of people in the business, but also externally, mentors, coaches who support me in different areas. So no hard ask, Tom. No hard ask.
I could sit and challenge you about that because, focus is an important thing, but that's for another day. And you've eased into the third question I asked you, which is, what can you share for other startup founders and lessons you've learned? You just said, for example, you ask people and you've got people who support you in different ways. So that's one thing. So what have you learned? Like, You know, what surprised you? What hasn't surprised you? What have you learned? What would you share with others who might look to go on the startup founder journey?
The worst bit of advice I ever heard was on a video on LinkedIn where somebody said, another founder said, everyone should try running their own business. I think that's terrible advice. Because think of it like a, this is from another video. I think of it like a surgeon. You know, to become a surgeon is really bloody difficult. I absolutely appreciate that. I don't think I would be able to become a surgeon. But ultimately, a surgeon knows that they need to go through a certain number of steps. They know the steps and they know how they get to become a surgeon. It's very clear. There's a clear path. It's like the rank structure in the military. It's quite a clear
absolutely.
The ambiguity around the startup world is something that I have never experienced. I called it yesterday an ambiguous emotional roller coaster in a post I did on LinkedIn. And I think that's accurate. I think I underestimated the levels of highs and lows in the business like that. That's definitely something that you can either become comfortable with or not. I think I'm kind of like battle hardened with like calluses on my brain to deal with like that up and down now. And I think surrounding yourself with people who can offer sound advice and maybe not weighted towards, you know, personal gain is super important. So I've managed to get a number of mentors who I meet every month in different areas, venture capitalist, tech founder, a really senior veteran. So I just get different opinions from different people has been really important. So speaking to a lot of people. And then recently I started to get coaching for the first time I've never had a coach. And actually that the coaching side of it, it's a bit like a therapy session for me. It's quite nice. I have it every 2 weeks and we just talk about some of the challenges I'm facing and why the way I'm thinking and that type of thing. And that has also, you know, really helped carve that little bit of time out to take myself out of the business day to day a little bit and I don't know, just unpick some things in my mind.
Okay. So I'd be interested in what's your take on, because you mentioned you've got several mentors.
Yeah.
You mentioned, I mean, tech, venture cap, veterans, all relevant to what you're building.
Yeah.
And you recently got a coach who you talk to every couple of weeks. What's the difference between mentoring and coaching? What for you?
Yeah, mentors, I'm seeking advice.
Hmm.
Opinions. I'm seeking opinions. Now, those opinions, I don't take any opinion as like that's the right thing to do. I find like a good book, try and pick one or two good things out of that conversation that is going to help me guide me to the next step based on that person's experience. So I get a lot of value out of that mentoring piece. And I don't meet some mentors, I don't meet as regularly as other mentors. It really depends. So that's the mentoring side. The coaching side is completely different. Because it's actually the coach just listens and just asks really like poignant questions around the thing you say. So you need to become comfortable with that. I found that I really trust the coach that I'm working with. He's ex-military, happens to be ex-military. And actually as that relationship kind of evolves, you then start to share more
right
with him and the questions he asks really like help you unpick things. You're talking to yourself fundamentally.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. So I think it's very, very different in terms of the relationship with a mentor and a coach, in my opinion.
I was interested in, I'm genuinely interested in your take. And also, of course, it's super relevant to me because it's broadly what I do for a living.
Yeah.
And for me, I call myself a sounding board because it's slightly a bit of all. But actually, I do come from a coaching mindset. And I think a general definition of that is the coach believes that the client has the answers. So
yeah.
The idea is that in you talking to yourself and them asking questions, they help you work it out for yourself. And then the mentor is there generally to, you know, give you ideas and opinions and stuff. So
it just takes you out of, you know, being, you know, you can be in a call with a client, in with a call with the marketing team, in with a call with the tech team. So you just jump in between a lot of things quite often. And actually sometimes, you know, you've got to try and carve out the time to think.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. But actually, that time is fundamentally thinking time. I see it as thinking time. It's just time to really unpick decisions.
Yeah.
But it's super valuable. 1 hour every 2 weeks is you know definitely.
So some thinking time. So it's an ambiguous emotional roller coaster. You've got calluses on your brain. It's not for everybody running your own business. Because there's a lot of uncertainty, right? And you've got to be okay with that. But it sounds like you're equipping yourself quite well for it. I'm sitting here right now thinking as we draw towards the end, when I want to do a LinkedIn post tomorrow with the podcast, I do want to send it out to tag different people, or not even tag individuals, but just to recommend it to certain people, certainly talent acquisition leaders, ex-military business leaders. I'm wondering, you know, and I think sometimes it is good to specifically ask, but I mean, you're doing so many, I can imagine from talking to you a few times, you're having so many conversations with people. It's difficult to focus. I see it as a massive opportunity. That's when I first had a walk and talk with you. I went, this is a huge opportunity, to support that community, but it's a win-win. All right. Because as somebody who has employed many, many people over the years, what you get with, you know, from something as simple as showing up well presented on time for work, like it's difficult to say to somebody who's fully civilian, you'd never ever show up late if you're ex-military. You're always on time. And that's something as simple as that. But everything from that, the professionalism you talked about in different ways. So I hope from the end of this, I'll think about how I'm going to, who I'm going to point it out tomorrow, and to focus that down. And I hope that those who listen to this podcast in the coming weeks will start thinking differently about people with a military background and when it comes to civilian employment. So let me leave you with a minute or two for your closing thoughts to share with the audience.
I was going to say, Tom, the reality is there are talent challenges across many industries.
Yeah.
You said around engineering recruitment, you know, we're working on a big project, it's no secret, working on a big project with Schneider Electric at the moment, you know, landing 20 veterans into their business in one go through a military transition academy, like training people to become engineers in their business. The energy sector has a huge challenge with a shortage and an aging workforce. Space industry is trying to take 10% global market share in the UK by 2030. Like there's a need, and there's a huge, huge talent pool out there of super professional, skilled people who aren't are fundamentally going to come in and make a difference in the business. Culturally, their work ethic, the way that they operate is, you know, I'm proof is in the pudding. I hire veterans into our business.
There you go.
Straight out of the military. So it's definitely an opportunity for people. Definitely.
I love that. You're eating your own dog food, as they say in America. You hire veterans. It's been an absolute pleasure, Ben, and I, like you, I'm not from the south of England, although my accent's not quite so directed. All the best for Redeployable and in building your community. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you
so much, Tom. Thanks for having me.